Thank you, ladies. That's high quality music. That's very good. Years ago, I guess I could talk about my call to adventure when I first started coming to the church, age 23. And for a number of years afterwards, I was not very open about aspects of my faith and my beliefs, or the new beliefs I was gaining, the new things I was learning, when I dealt with people outside of the church. It's sort of like I had two different lives. My new life as a Sabbath keeper on Saturday, and my old life as a nominal, traditional Protestant Christian, where I could kind of fit in with everybody else for the rest of the week. Didn't want my faith to be an issue at work. Now, obviously, it was at times. And when it came to the Sabbath and the holy days. But otherwise, I wanted to go through my life in the outside world, outside of church, kind of unnoticed for my beliefs. Inwardly, privately, I accepted Christ, and I accepted the new things I was learning, but outwardly, I kept a real low profile concerning my beliefs. It was almost as though I tried to keep my faith hidden. I didn't want to draw attention. I just wanted to blend in with the world around me. I didn't want to stand out. With that as sort of a introspective introduction that I'll tie into later, I want to continue with a series of messages that I've been presenting on the book of Daniel. On the previous installment, we went through all of chapter 5, and we focused on King Belshazzar, the mistakes he made, and the lessons that we could learn from his example. And you could begin turning to the book of Daniel. Before we head into chapter 6, though, I want to return to a portion of chapter 5 and present and focus on an additional lesson that starts there concerning not Belshazzar, but Daniel this time. When I started this series, it was in the context of what we could learn from Daniel's experience living in the culture of ancient Babylon and how we could apply that to our experience living in the culture of modern Babylon today. That is, what can we learn about living in Babylon and not being of Babylon? Or as Jesus would put it, living in the world but not being of the world. So I want to go back to this sort of perspective and have us ask ourselves, how well do we measure up to Daniel's example? Could some of the things that were said of Daniel be said of us? In Daniel 5, we'll kind of review here. We notice that in the first 9 verses, Belshazzar is very anxious, very upset, because his astrologers, his soothsayers, and his wise men are unable to read the supernatural writing on the wall. So in verse 10, I'll start reading there, the queen, and again, this is probably the queen mother, wife of Nabonidus. There's also the possibility that could have been Nebuchadnezzar's widow. Not really sure there. But the queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke, saying, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy God." The queen remembers a man who made a big impression on her, someone who stood out in her memory. And in the days of your father, and remember, a better translation would probably be ancestor here, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, actually grandfather, because it's ancestor here, your father, your grandfather, the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Verse 12, inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation. Verse 13, then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, are you that Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my grandfather the king brought from Judah? I have heard of you. You've got quite a reputation that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Verse 15, now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me. They should read the writing and make known to me its interpretation. They could not give the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of you that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple, have a chain of gold around your neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. It'll be you, me, and my father Nabonidus. Well, he didn't really say that, but that's what he meant. Verse 17. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself, and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. Notice again that Daniel had no intention of promoting himself or enriching himself because of something God was doing and accomplishing through him. I'll just do what I'm supposed to do, and we'll leave it at that. So we do see, though, that Daniel was remembered. He had a reputation, and it was a good reputation. And what was it, you might ask yourselves, what was it that made him stand out? Well, let's notice the criteria that describes him. Back in verse 11, the queen, or the queen mother here, refers to Daniel first and foremost as a man in whom is the Spirit of the Holy God. She then goes on to list 8 more qualities for which he stood out. And let's take a closer look and ask, how would we match up? Could those things be said of us? Okay, the first quality I've got here, light. She used the term light. Light was found in Daniel. And under the topic of light here, I've got 3 subpoints. I've got subpoint A, B, and C. Under subpoint A, light stands out. It gets noticed. A few months ago, Carl Kester gave a message, and he reminded us of how our light should stand out in the dark world around us. And I was getting kind of introspective there. And we could turn to Matthew 5, because that message got me to thinking, especially in terms of what I mentioned in my introduction. Daniel stood out. Daniel was noticed. Matthew 5, verse 14, I'll start. You are, referring to his disciples and us as well, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Do we stand out? Or do we try to blend in with the world around us? My subpoint B, the word light in the Bible is often associated with righteousness. And Daniel was well known, even famous for his righteousness. No need to turn there, but you could jot down the book of Ezekiel. In two places, Ezekiel extols Daniel, along with Noah and Job, for his righteousness. References Ezekiel 14:12 and 14:19. But Daniel faithfully kept God's commandments. Point C, or subpoint C, we don't force people to look at our light. We don't necessarily try to draw attention to ourselves. You can begin turning to Matthew 6. We don't want to intentionally shine our light in people's faces. I mean, that's kind of irritating. We don't want to be pharisaical in order to stand out. In Matthew 6, Jesus tells us what not to do. Matthew 6, verse 1, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you. Don't draw attention to yourself, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Actually, I say to you, they have their reward. And when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. Verse 5, when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they pray standing in the synagogues and the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Not sure if this relates exactly, but I do remember when I was an 18-year-old freshman at the time was Oregon College of Education over in Monmouth, Western Oregon University. I remember two guys from my dorm sitting in a very prominent place in front of the student center in what appeared to be a pile of ashes, and they were wearing very simple clothing that appeared to be made out of gunny sacks. I didn't know too much about the Bible or anything, but I thought that was rather odd. I think they may have been holding a sign that said, repent. And so I figured it was kind of, they were religious weirdos. Where's Colleen Tompkins? She was there at that time. I don't know if she remembers that sort of thing, because she spent a lot of time in the student center there, but it seemed like they were there for a couple of days, and I know they stood out. I don't know that they're necessarily trying to draw attention to themselves, so maybe I shouldn't use that as an example, because now that I think about it, God told Jeremiah to do some strange things, and probably stranger than that, so not sure of the value of that example, but it's kind of interesting. Let's see, criteria number two, another thing the Queen mentioned. I think Belshazzar mentioned it also. Number two, knowledge. Number three, understanding. Number four, wisdom. Lumping them together here. Daniel was known for his knowledge, his understanding, and his wisdom. Could that be said of us? Well, we have just as much access to knowledge, understanding, and wisdom as Daniel ever had. We have knowledge that's available in the entirety of the Bible. And because of this, we can put some things together in the writings of the New Testament with those of the Old Testament, and we can make sense of things that Daniel could not at that time understand. We notice a passage in Daniel 12, kind of jump ahead of Daniel here just a little bit. Daniel 12, Daniel's describing a prophetic end-time vision, and recording, I'm not going to go into the vision here, but he's recording the words that he hears spoken in that vision. Daniel 12, verse 8, "Although I heard," Daniel writes, "I did not understand. Then I said, 'My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?'" Verse 9, he said, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But the wise shall understand." That's supposed to be us. We have the opportunity to understand. We have the opportunity to be wise and to grow in wisdom. Again, we have the entirety of the Bible. We could even focus on the Book of Wisdom, the Proverbs. And what if we're still lacking in wisdom? Well, James reminds us that we can pray for wisdom. I won't turn there, but James 1, verse 5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally, without reproach, and will be given to him." Criteria number five. Daniel had an excellent spirit. And this is a big one. We might evaluate ourselves in this one, too. And in fact, how would we evaluate ourselves in this regard? Maybe some of you are already thinking ahead here. What kind of criteria could we use to determine whether an excellent spirit is found in us? How about the fruits of the Spirit? Criteria listed in the New Testament, Paul's letter to the Galatians. If we could start Galatians 5:22, I'll read through that. And we can review the fruits of an excellent spirit. So we got some more subpoints here. Galatians 5:22, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love," you know, outgoing concern for others, "joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law." We could spend some time, probably go down each one of those. Am I known for having an excellent spirit? Well, sometimes I get stopped with joy for a moment. And I think back, public school teaching, especially when I was young and starting out, and, well, even when I got older and got frustrated at times, there were stresses. And I wonder, do people or the students that I've worked with remember the times when I was not too joyful? I was grumpy. I whined a lot. I whined to my wife, I remember. "We're getting this new curriculum. This curriculum doesn't make any sense." And she remembers those days. I was not very joyful. And I complained a lot. But the word excellent is a positive word. Do I display a positive attitude, a positive spirit, even under difficult circumstances? I can think of a lot of times where no, I did not. Another of the fruits to consider, again, I think of this in terms of how teaching tested me at times, and I probably didn't pass the test, self-control. There were times I did not control my anger too well. Of course, there's other things related to self-control in our society today. The temptations that are so readily available in our current modern Babylon, affluent Babylon. How well do people control their passions, their desire for things, the desire to buy things on credit, get things when they don't really have the money for them, but you can still have those things, at least temporarily. Materialism. How well do people control their appetites? Many in our society today seem to have an appetite both for food or unhealthy food and unhealthy things in our society, unhealthy entertainment. People are corrupting both their bodies and their minds. But excellent spirit. Throughout the course of the last 4 years that I've been substitute teaching, I've substituted an awful lot of classes, and I've had some students that have kind of stood out to me, and one of them happens to be a special education student. I've known him for the last 3 years, and I've substituted for a number of different special ed classes, and he's been in a number of those classes. But he graduated yesterday, and in fact, he came in and saw me, as he frequently does. Very friendly kid, very positive, tries hard under difficult circumstances, but he'll come in, "Mr. Hansen, how you doing?" He'll shake my hand, he'll give me a fist bump in the hall, but always got a smile on his face. And I told him yesterday, "You know, you've got an excellent spirit." And I thought, you know, I should have a spirit like that. I should be like that kid. Good example for me. Turns out he is the son of missionary parents, so he's got some of that influence there, and apparently his parents have been doing a pretty good job with him. Moving on to criteria number 6. Ah, yes. Interpreting dreams. How well do we do with that? I don't think I could match Daniel with that one. Right now, I don't think I've been given that sort of gift. However, I've got to think about it. If President Trump ever came up to me and he said, "Hey, you know, I've had this troubling dream about this great tree, and it gets chopped down, etc., etc." I think I could give him some advice, and I think I could interpret that dream for him. Have to leave the rest of that, though. Number 7, though, solving riddles. Number 8, explaining enigmas. Solving riddles and explaining enigmas. I'm going to have you turn to Matthew 13. Could those things be said of us? Solving riddles, explaining enigmas. Could we solve an enigma or a riddle like the writing on the wall? Matthew 13, Jesus has just explained the parable of the sower to his disciples. Go to verse 10. "And the disciples came and said to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' He answered and said to them, 'Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. But to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore, I speak to them in parables.'" Messages with symbolic meaning that maybe not everybody understands, that are things that are an enigma to some people. "Because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them.'" Verse 16, "But blessed are your eyes, for they see." We should be able to see these things. "And your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men, like Daniel, desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." we have some advantages. To most people, the problems of the world today do constitute a riddle and a huge enigma. But we know the ultimate solution. And we have an understanding of the events that must take place prior to the end of this age and the return of Christ. Now, we may not be prophets in the manner of Daniel, but we have been given the gift of knowledge and the gift to understand the symbolic meaning of the parables and the historical meaning of the prophetic images that even Daniel presented. We know and we understand, for example, the meaning of the great image that was a part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. Daniel didn't understand all that, how all that would fit in, or all the coming kingdoms that would be entailed with that. We know how that fits into history, and we know what it means for our day today. So in one sense, yes, we do have the ability to read the writing on the wall for our times today. Now, if we display these eight traits, if we stand out, if we're recognized for having an excellent spirit and having the spirit of the Holy God dwelling in us, then we can expect two things. Number one, we will be appreciated because of it. Will be known as honest, helpful, dependable, hardworking people. We'll be known as people who strive to be competent at whatever job we do. And we'll do it with a kind and patient attitude. Or we'll try to. We'll have a positive impact on many people. And we'll be appreciated for it. The other thing we can expect, number two, we will not be appreciated for it. Because we live our lives according to the Spirit of God, there will be those who will intentionally cause problems for us. They'll ridicule us. They'll mock us. They'll harass us. Some will feel intimidated and threatened by us. You can begin turning to John 15. They'll call us haters. Seems to be the new terminology now, haters. If we publicly state some clear biblical truths, some are going to be offended and accuse us of hate speech. For example, consider our view of marriage equality. Marriage equality. Well, for us, a marriage involving individuals of two sexes cannot possibly be equal to a union of one sex. Two, one, they're different. That's not equality. But you're going to offend people with that. And issues like this could lead to being sued, being fined, the loss of a job. In fact, we can see that with people who call themselves Christians, who are acting what they think are their Christian beliefs. Some countries now, there's serious persecution for people who call themselves Christians. China, people are getting jailed. Middle East, people are being tortured and put to death. We haven't quite faced that yet here in this country. Wanted you to turn to John 15. We're going to start John 15, verse 18. And we'll notice that Jesus warned us that this would be the case. John 15, 18, Jesus is speaking to his disciples. If the world hates you, You know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. You'd fit in. You'd fit into the world, and the world would love you for that. Yet because you are not of the world, because I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Move forward two chapters to John 17. Here Jesus is praying to God the Father concerning his disciples. John 17, we'll start in verse 14. Jesus says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. The pressure to fit in with the world can cause us to come under the influence of the evil one, Satan. So Jesus prays that we have help in being protected from that influence. Certainly our young people need that help in the educational institutions and environments. There's a politically correct environment that exists at a lot of the colleges now, and our young people are subject to that. Verse 16, they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them, set them apart by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. Notice, he did not say, go isolate yourselves from the world. We've been sent into the world. We have to live in this world. We have to live in this Babylon. And we're instructed to do so. Verse 19, and for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified, set apart, by the truth. Jesus' disciples, including us, are to be in the world, but not of the world. And because we have access to the truth and the instruction of God's word, we strive to set ourselves apart from the corrupt ways of the world. But sometimes standing out will cause us serious conflict. But it's better to be in conflict with Babylon than to be in conflict with God. I heard that quote from Peter Eddington. He gave a similar message. I thought that was a good quote. I should write that down. It's better to be in conflict with Babylon than to be in conflict with God. Let's turn back to the book of Daniel. Daniel was much appreciated by Nebuchadnezzar and eventually by Darius. But there were many others who did not appreciate him. And we'll notice that in chapter 6. When we stand out, it'll work both for us and against us. Daniel 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps. Satrap is some sort of regional governor or administrator. A satrap to be over the whole kingdom. And over these, three governors, three higher rank governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps. Must have been extremely conscientious and competent in his job. Because an excellent spirit, there's that term again, an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Daniel definitely stood out from the rest of them. Verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge. No charge or fault, because he was faithful. He did his job well. nor was there any error or fault in him. Remember, he was famous for his righteousness. Verse 5, then these men said, probably men who were envious or jealous of this, these men said, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. We'll have to make something up, and probably the best way to do it is we know he's going to honor his God. So maybe we can do something with that. So the governor, these governors and satraps, they thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree. So they came up with something that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. And I can sort of envision them coming to him. Darius is maybe busy with something else. And what do you got here? Okay, that sounds good. I'll sign it. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Okay, here, I've signed it. Now, let me get back to my work. Not sure that's the way it happened, but I can envision it that way. Verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, knew it was coming here, he knelt down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. He wasn't going to allow that to change him. Verse 11, then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Things are working according to their plan here. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing's true, yeah, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself. Oh, what have I done? I didn't think that one through. And set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. You can't do anything about this. So the king gave the command, must have been very reluctantly, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Although he must not have been real confident of that. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signets of his lords with the purpose, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Verse 18, then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no musicians were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. He worried about this. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. It sounds like he didn't expect to hear anything in return. The king spoke, saying, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. I wouldn't cross you. I've been faithful to you. 23. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he believed in his God. Verse 24. The king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Verse 25, then Darius wrote, to all peoples, nations, languages that dwell on the earth, peace be multiplied to you. This had big impact on Darius. And it sounds kind of similar to the decree that Nebuchadnezzar gave after his 7 years of wandering around like a beast. That impressed Nebuchadnezzar, and Darius was impressed here. Language sounds similar. Peace be multiplied to you. Verse 26, I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. Daniel was a witness to Darius here. He delivers and rescues, Darius says, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. Who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? Verse 28. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Daniel had impact on the rulership here. After the episode in the lion's den, Daniel stood out even more by demonstrating the courage of his convictions. And it took faith and courage to stand out like this. Well, brethren, as we strive to be better servants of God, as we strive to grow in character, as we strive to prepare the way and be a part of the work that's preparing the way for Christ's return, more and more, kind of introspectively, I try to remind myself and I ask myself, do I display an excellent spirit? Do I stand out? Do I stand out in the world today like Daniel did in Babylon? The book of Daniel has given me a much better and deeper understanding of what it means to live in Babylon and not be of Babylon, or in the world and not be of the world. And it shows me that we've been given an opportunity, or maybe I should say a responsibility, to stand out. Are we that shining city on a hill, or are we hiding our light under a basket? Do we blend in, or do we try to blend in with the world around us, or do we stand out? And could it be said of us, as it was of Daniel, in him dwells the Spirit of the Holy God?